On last week's show, the religious affairs journalist Stephen Crittenden raised questions about the level of independence that the Catholic Church's Truth, Justice and Healing Council has from the bishops. It's emerged that the council is overseen by a so-called supervisory group of bishops that includes the Archbishop of Adelaide, Philip Wilson. Archbishop Wilson is a person of interest in a police brief of evidence to the New South Wales Director of Public Prosecutions. That brief concerns an alleged cover-up of sex abuse in the church's Maitland Newcastle diocese. The DPP is yet to decide if he will press charges against anyone in that matter. The Truth, Justice and Healing Council is headed by a former New South Wales Supreme Court Justice, Barry O'Keefe, and it comprises a very distinguished group of former jurists and parliamentarians and experts in child psychology, mental health and law. It's designed to provide independent advice to the bishops on how to deal with the Royal Commission into Institutional Sex Abuse and also on how to improve the Church's own handling of sex abuse matters. But it has very few formal powers. I asked the church's or the chief executive of the council, Francis Sullivan, to explain its role and its limits.
The bishops and the religious leaders made it very clear that they needed an independent body of people to advise them and to coordinate the whole of church strategy with the Royal Commission. Mm. The people that have been selected are selected because they are competent and have an experience of providing independent advice.
Well, there's no question about their competence. The issue was, though, about the supervisory group overseeing the council, described as shadowy last week. I mean, why didn't the public really know much about the supervisory group that oversees your council? Because it's made up of archbishops and religious leaders.
Well, the archbishops, of course, are the permanent committee of the Australian Catholic Bishops' Conference, and that's the group that established our council. And the three others on the supervisory group are the three leading religious leaders from Catholic Religious Australia. But the important thing, Andrew, is this. Those bodies recognised that we needed a whole-of-church strategy. In order to have a whole-of-church strategy, they needed a single point of advice, and that advice needed to be independent of the past. Because you know, and many of your listeners know, there's 189 religious orders, there's well over 30 dioceses. They've had their own advice for a long time. Some of that advice hasn't served them that well.
I do need to press you a little bit on this supervisory group. Why is it only in the past week or so that the public has learned the names of the members of the supervisory group, who include George Pell, Dennis Hart, and most controversially, Archbishop Philip Wilson of Adelaide? Why do we only know about their names in the last couple of weeks?
Well, we've been mentioning the names at many forums and meetings that I've been doing for the last 6 months, Andrew, and the names come from permanent committees of the Bishops' Conference. They've been there forever in that sense as archbishops. And to some degree, the supervisory group, you say a powerful group, in reality, it's a soft touch supervisory element to what is a delegated role to the council.
Sure, but why does the Truth, Justice and Healing Council, led by yourself, now you ran a major professional organisation in this country, the AMA, it's chaired by Justice Barry O'Keefe, a Supreme Court Justice. Why do you and Barry O'Keefe, also Sue Gordon, a distinguished magistrate, why do you need a light touch regulation?
Well, at the end of the day, we're going to provide a competent, independent advice and recommendations to the church leadership. Now, the church leadership has to be formed somewhere. Remember, they're all individual authorities. They need some go-to point. That's the point of the supervisory group. But secondly, the people that are on the council are pretty rugged individuals when it comes to being independent. They'll put forward the recommendations, and it's on the heads of the church leadership to accept or not.
Yes, but no one's questioning the integrity of the members of the council. But I think a lot of people might even be a little bit troubled to hear that you and Barry O'Keefe, when the supervisory group meet, you don't have the right to make any decision. They don't have to act on what you say, do they?
Well, let's put it this way. We go to the meetings to present our recommendations, and clearly explain them if need be. There is no manipulation of our workup. There's no hindrance or hampering during the time we work up our recommendations. We wouldn't accept that. All our recommendations have been accepted to date, and we've pushed them pretty hard.
But I do just quote to you here, Francis, the Truth, Justice, Healing Council, and this is from the terms of reference, is charged subject to directions from the supervisory group. I mean, pretty much everything you recommend or that you want to do, you have to refer back upwards to this group of bishops, don't you?
Not refer, we recommend to the supervisory group. It's not an issue about power. It's about the potency of our recommendation.
Okay, I don't want to labour this point, but I think it's important. The council may also refer to the supervisory group for its consideration, that is the supervisory group's consideration, any recommendations it would make in relation to the following: reporting to police, vicarious liability of bishops and church leaders, and the introduction of criminal offences linked to the conduct of church leaders. So does this mean that if any one of your panel says, we believe that this bishop or this clergyman has a case to answer, and we believe that ought to be sent on to the Royal Commission, that you have to get the permission of the bishops to do that?
No, what it means is, firstly, it wouldn't be any one of our council, it would be the council as a whole making recommendations, but we're talking about public policy concepts there. So they want solid advice from us about the type of recommendations for change that we would put into the mix with the Royal Commission.
But what's going to happen, Francis, if you and Justice O'Keefe say, right, well, our recommendation is that every allegation made against a clergyman, every allegation made that a bishop or someone in the church hierarchy may have vacillated or covered up on a... We want every allegation to go to the Royal Commission.
Both Justice O'Keefe and myself have said from the word go that the whole process for the Royal Commission is not going to be an exercise in spin, and it's not going to be an exercise in covering up crime. It's an exercise in explaining the past, including fessing up about poor behaviour, but it's not an exercise in hiding anything that's of a criminal nature.
I don't think anyone would doubt your sincerity on that. I'm just wondering, though, what's going to happen if the bishops say, well, hang on a minute, we're not sure about whether these matters should be referred to the Royal Commission.
Well, given we're living in the land of hypothetical here, let's stay there. If something like that occurred, then obviously people like Barry O'Keefe and myself would have to consider our position.
So that would mean that you may well resign from this council.
We've made it very clear that we are not going to be played with. We're going to give strong, independent advice. We believe it's the way to go. There'd need to be a very strong argument against it. But I'd have to say that we know where we stand on that, and we know that as long as we can continue in a place of integrity, we would remain.
Let me ask you finally about the position of Archbishop Wilson. Archbishop Wilson is known to be a person of interest in a police brief of evidence delivered to the Director of Public Prosecutions in New South Wales late last year. The DPP is still to determine whether charges will be laid. So that's one issue that Archbishop Wilson's facing. The other is that Archbishop Wilson gave evidence in camera to the Kinnean Inquiry earlier this year in Newcastle, and that was an inquiry into an alleged cover-up of sexual abuse by two offending priests. Is it a problem for you that Archbishop Wilson is on your supervisory group?
Well, as I said, we've got no problem with the supervisory group in any way interfering or meddling with our work. They certainly have accepted all our recommendations. That's the first point. Secondly, as far as Archbishop Wilson goes and the Kinnean Inquiry, I have no facts to understand what's gone on there. So at a personal level, I wait to see what the report will say.
But surely it is not very good for the image of the council to have, as one of the people supervising it, an archbishop who is facing serious questions in relation to the matter of child protection.
I don't know what questions he's facing.
Well, I've just put to you there that he is mentioned as a person of interest in a brief of evidence before the DPP.
Yes, but it's all in camera, as you just mentioned. I don't know any of the facts. We will wait till the report comes, and then whatever is in that report will determine the future.
Would it be easier for you if Archbishop Wilson were to himself stand aside from that supervisory group until the questions are answered?
Well, it's not difficult for me on a day-to-day basis, but you need to ask others those questions.
All right. Francis Sullivan, the CEO of the Truth, Justice and Healing Council, thank you very much for being on the Religion and Ethics Report.
Thanks for having me, Andrew.